Hi, I'm Mal Majoros. I am an 8-year cancer survivor. My blog, The Cancer Warrior, is one of the top 10 breast cancer blogs, according to blogs.com. I'm here to bring a fresh, upbeat perspective to a topic that to some may seem scary. A positive mental attitude got me through my cancer, and I hope to share that with you. So my good friends at Longevity, Katie Brown, introduced me to Samantha Mixon. She's a stage 4 lung cancer survivor, and she's going to tell us all about her story. How are you today, Samantha?
I'm good. How are you?
Excellent. So you were very young when you were diagnosed. Let's start out. Tell our audience how you found out you had lung cancer, and we'll go from there.
Well, for about 8 months before I was actually diagnosed, I'd been having headaches, and they made my brain feel so full all the time to where I felt like my head was going to explode, and it was causing me to miss a lot of work. So I kept going to the doctor, and they kept telling me that I had sinus infections, and so they would just give me sinus infection medicine, which wasn't doing any good, and pain relievers for the migraines. Finally, I went to visit my family on the outskirts of Atlanta in Henry County, and I told my mom that I really needed to go to the hospital, that I couldn't take the pain anymore. Mm-hmm. And so she took me to a hospital in Henry County, and they did a CAT scan and found a tumor, a brain tumor, and I was transferred via ambulance that night to Piedmont, Atlanta, where a day after I arrived, they did a craniotomy to remove a tumor in my brain.
Holy crap.
It was just after my 33rd birthday. I had a 7-year-old. I have a 7, well, she was 7 at the time. And
That was not what you were expecting when you went to the hospital. Oh, yeah, by the way, we're just going to open up your head. Whoa.
No, it's not. Not at all. Well, wow. I had a family history of brain tumor. So okay. I was thinking, okay, it's a brain tumor. We'll remove it and we'll go on with life.
Right.
But, when I was leaving, you know, Henry, I got upset and I was like, I need to see Carly again, who's my daughter. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to see her before they transferred me, because they took me off of morphine and put me on Dilaudid, which was a lot stronger. And my dad brought her up there, and I gave her a hug, and she wanted to get in the ambulance with me, and they wouldn't let her, and it was just painful to watch.
That's lame.
Her father... Pardon me?
I said that's pretty lame that they wouldn't let your daughter.
Yeah, they wouldn't let her. I mean, it was already close to midnight. So I don't remember much about anything else after they transferred me. Her father came and picked her up. We live in St. Simon's Island, so it was about a 5-hour drive from there. So her father came and picked her up and brought her back down to St. Simon's. And at the time, I was a single mom. So I stayed up there, and he watched her. And I don't remember anything until I woke up after brain surgery. And they came in and said, we found a tumor in your brain, and it's malignant. And the word malignant just stuck in my head. And then it was like a Charlie Brown show with the want, want, mm-hmm. want, want.
Oh, yes. I know that. I know that well, very well, unfortunately.
And then I heard it came from somewhere else in your body, which immediately, I used to work in the medical field and in college, so I knew that it was stage 4. So he said, it's most likely your lung that it came from. And so we're going to order a full body PET scan once you recovered to find out, you know, where, you know, exactly it is. They did a biopsy of it. It did come from my lung, and they sent out some tests. And these were genome tests that were able to find a genetic marker, a genetic mutation of sorts, EGFR mutation.
Okay, what is that?
So before I found out that, my oncologist wanted to start me on chemo, and I was, you know, okay, let's do this. Let's get rid of this. Just can't you cut it out?
Right.
No, we can't just cut it out. It's in, you know, you can't just cut it out. It's stage four. So I was like, fine, I'll just find someone else who will. So I went to Baptist down in Florida, and I had a really good oncologist, and she said, I recommend you go on this pill called Tarceva. And I was like, okay, that doesn't sound very hardcore. I want to get rid of this. And so then again, I asked about surgery, and she said, you know, maybe later on down the road. So then I said, okay, I'm going to find someone else. So then I went to MD Anderson.
Nice.
And at MD Anderson, they did, they had a whole plethora of tests scheduled, and I was going through them, and then I ordered a chest CT, and the doctor called me herself the next day, the oncologist, and said, I'm coming in on my day off. I've canceled the rest of your appointments. I need to talk to you.
Oh,
so I knew that that wasn't good.
No, that's never good. I'm taking the rest of the day off to talk to you. No.
Yeesh. Yeah. Her day off coming in was not a good sign. So I went in, and we fly on buddy passes because my dad worked for Delta. So
nice.
I went in, and they told me that she told me that it had spread to my left lung, and it was throughout my right lung, and there are numerous nodes in my left lung, my mediastinum, around my heart, pretty much everywhere. And the best course of action was the Tarceva because I was EGFR positive.
Which means
and at
what?
The time,
what does that mean, EGFR positive?
EGFR is a mutation. It's a genetic mutation.
Mm-hmm.
There's several of them. And with those, the sum of the genetic mutations, they have drugs, pills that can take daily instead of having to do traditional chemo. So I take this pill daily, which I've been on for over 3 years now. I take the same time every day. I can't eat 2 hours before I take it, and I can't eat an hour after I take it.
Mm.
So it's kind of hard to keep up with, but it's much better than doing the traditional chemo. But it only lasts for so long. And I didn't think that a pill could do as much as chemo, but in fact, it's actually better because it only targets the cells that are bad for you,
right,
and doesn't target your healthy cells.
Yeah, like I had that. I had that with Herceptin for my breast cancer, so I know what you're talking about. And I think genomics is the way to go as far as cancer treatments. Just have to
exactly
get people to find more money. So you're on this Tarceva, which I hear is a blessing for a lot of lung cancer patients.
It has been, yes. It's been a blessing for me. This last scan showed a nodule that was growing slightly, so we have to keep an eye on it. But I've heard that AstraZeneca just put out a new drug that is supposed to be a second-line or third-line treatment for EGFR mutations, which, you know, they may do chemo maintenance or go straight to that new targeted drug. I'm not sure, but that's how, you know, that went. So we'll see how that goes. We just have to keep an eye on it. Right now I'm staying on the Tarceva.
So getting back to your first diagnosis with having a sinus infection, how many times did the doctor say, oh, yeah, it's just a sinus infection before you said, no, it isn't?
Oh, probably 5 or 6. I mean, I got to the point where I bought a nebulizer. I was in the emergency room twice. But nothing...
Nothing was working? Nothing was helping. Nothing was working for you.
Nothing was working.
Mm-hmm.
So after buying, you know, spending $70 on a nebulizer and then going through all that, it was so aggravating. It was like I'm spending so much money on these medical bills and I'm not getting any results.
Yeah, and that's a good lesson for some people. If they go to a doctor and you know, you go to a couple times and they just keep sending, giving you the same diagnosis, then I always tell people, you know, your doctor works for you. So you have to find a doctor that you like. And if they keep telling you, oh, well, you know, it's just a sinus infection. If you don't think it is and you think it's not right, then definitely get a second opinion. It's like, you know, if you just said, oh, yeah, sinus infection, we might not be here talking to you. You know,
right. And that's
huge. Yeah. And you went to, what, 3 or 4 different doctors and finally to MD Anderson, which is one of the best cancer hospitals in the country, to find the doctor who would do what you wanted to do. And that's, you know, not everyone can do that because of financial issues. I get that. But it's always important to get a second opinion or even a third opinion, especially when it comes to cancer.
Exactly. I mean, I don't even go to Piedmont. I mean, I don't go to MD Anderson. I go to Piedmont Atlanta now because he's in communication with my oncologist. Like, I'll talk to anybody you want to talk to about your case. So they communicated about my case.
Awesome.
My primary tumor started growing in 2013, progressing a little bit. So what they did was stereotactic body radiation, where they targeted the one tumor in my lung. And as you know, as you breathe, the tumors move in your lungs.
Ugh.
So you have to be perfectly still and hold your breath, or, you know, let all the air out and then hold it, and then they radiate it. So we did that. And then the insurance company tried not to cover it, saying it wasn't medically necessary. So they tried to stick me with a $117,000 bill. But we fought it for...
Like,
about 2 years and we won. So
I don't see. Yeah, well, that's a whole other show talking about insurance companies. But your doctor prescribes you something that will help you live, and someone else says, well, it's not medically necessary. It's like, well,
you're not my doctor. In fact, the company's doctor, the company, they had a peer-to-peer review, and the radiation oncologist that worked for the insurance company said he would have done the same thing. It's not acceptable in my policy. To me, that was just insane.
That is insane. They just didn't want to pay for it. But, you know, like I said, that's a whole other, you know, I try to keep upbeat and everything. So that's, you know, that's a problem that some people will face as you face. So you had your the targeted radiation. Yeah, I had that. It's not the same thing. I had breast cancer. And, you know, they told me, they're like, no, don't breathe too heavily or the radiation will get into your lungs. And, you know, it's kind of like probably like an MRI where you have to lay perfectly still. But then you think, am I laying too still? Am I not breathing? Am I breathing too much? And that kind of thing gets in your head as far as radiation goes. So I know what that's like. I mean, that must. Radiation for me was worse than the chemo or the surgery. It was just like.
Oh, yeah. The gamma knife was the worst for me. I had to do that after I had a craniotomy.
What is
and
that?
Where they put the halo around your head and bolt it, and then put it in there, and they target the cavity where they took the tumor out to make sure they get rid of all the cancer in the brain.
Oh.
But I've been
so you look like
in the brain for 3.
You look like Regina George at the end of Mean Girls. Is that right?
Yes. That's exactly what I look like. I even had the blonde hair.
That's funny.
But.
Wow.
But no, they got it out, and so after a year of clean scans, then I'm able to go annually now for brain scans, and still every 3 months for PET scans.
Cool.
But I started a blog because I couldn't talk about it in the beginning, because when they tell you at the hospital that you have 12 to 18 months to live, that's kind of hard. It's hard to swallow that pill. I mean, you know, especially when you're a single mom, you don't know what the fate of your family is going to be.
And
so I started getting, pardon me?
Oh, I'm sorry. And the good thing is you got a second opinion, because I have another friend of mine who actually had a brain tumor and they only gave her 14 months. And that was like, I don't know, at least 3 or 4 years ago. So, you know. Doctors don't know. They are just going by what, you know, other people's histories are. Statistics, correct. And your health and your history and your genetic makeup are different than everybody else's. So when they say, you know, oh, 12 to 18 months, I mean, I can't imagine how horrific that sounded. But, you know, if you now that you step back, you're like, oh yeah, that guy didn't know because, you know, I'm me and I'm not a statistic. I'm a person.
Yeah, exactly. So I didn't want to answer questions. I didn't want to talk to anybody. Mm-hmm. And then it was all depression that started my blog, I think. But yep. Then it became more than that. And it became a way for people to have some sort of hope because, you know, I was only given 12 to 18 months. Here I am. I'm doing fine. I'm advocating for places like longevity and team draft. And I've got two awards for this blog that I'm writing, and I've met some wonderful people. I met Paul Caliente when I went to the Super Bowl challenge that I won last year. I won the Taste of the NFL through team draft, and I met Paul Caliente, who passed away this past March of stage 4 lung cancer. He was 36. Mm. I believe, and his book is now the number one nonfiction New York Times bestseller.
Oh, nice.
When Breath Becomes Air.
So when you met all these people like Chris from Team Draft, you said the Super Bowl challenge. Did you go to the Super Bowl? Like, explain this. Because I know.
No, I went to the Taste of the NFL. I came in third.
Oh. That's cool, though. I know I saw the Super Bowl challenge this year. I'm like, that's pretty sweet. And I'm so happy for the lung cancer survivor who's going to the Super Bowl this year.
Yeah, I didn't try too hard this year because I had already gone and I thought somebody else deserved to go.
Exactly. So tell me about, I know we're going to delve in a little bit into the longevity mentor, but I've talked to Chris Draft and I've seen pictures on Facebook because I am a friend of his on Facebook. And unfortunately I missed his, speech at the Hope Summit this past year, but tell me what you do with Team Draft. I know he takes it's a survivor at every stadium, but what have you done with him?
Oh, he's amazing. Well, anytime that he needs somebody to, you know, to show, be a face of lung cancer, you know, I'm glad to do it anytime. His main thing is showing different faces of lung cancer, not just, you know, this person, but not just one person, showing all the different people. So we've gone to Jacksonville games, gone to Atlanta games, went to the Super Bowl challenge, and then I went during the Taste of the NFL, I went to every single football player table and told them all about Team Draft and how he's changing the face of lung cancer. He's trying to get out there that lung cancer isn't this old smoker's disease that everybody associates it with, that we need to get rid of that stigma. And so I went and talked to Miss America about it, Miss Arizona, Andy Dalton for the Cincinnati Bengals, Tim Tebow, Archie Manning. I mean, I met so many people and was able to talk to so many of them about the work that he does and the things that he does. He also lives close to my mom. So we've become really close friends. He's helped me with speeches for Free to Breathe or Longevity.
Awesome.
and stuff like that. So
now his Super Bowl party would be the one to go to. I'm just saying.
Yeah, definitely.
So you've been to these.
He's an awesome guy.
Yeah. Totally sounds like it. Like I said, I wish I would have gone to the Hope Summit last year. Now you've gone to these games. Tell me what that's like as a survivor being a part of Team Draft, because I know a lot of lung cancer survivors would love to be a part of that.
It's great being there. You know, I wish the we had more national attention than we do.
Oh, yes.
We do get on the media a lot. We do get media coverage. In Atlanta, there's a particular station, Channel 11, that always usually covers us. And I just love the people there. And they usually cover every event that we go to. But my daughter was able to stand on the sidelines and meet Tony Gonzalez and get her a picture with him and watch the Falcons go out. And so she was just in awe of it. Now she's a huge football fan.
Oh, you've turned her into a football fan. Now you're going to be a Sunday widow, right? As they say.
Right.
That's awesome. Right. Now, how does your daughter, if I may ask, and if I can, how was she when you first found out you had lung cancer? If that is something I may ask you.
Well, she was 7, and her mm-hmm. father and I decided to sit her down and tell her. We wanted to be honest with her because I didn't want to be her to ever remember me being dishonest. So we sat her down and I told her that, you know, mommy's got lung cancer and I can't promise you that I'm going to live, but I will promise you that I will do everything I can to live for you, everything in the world. And so she took it pretty well. She didn't cry. She said she knew something was wrong.
I would have cried if you'd said that to me. Wow. What a strong girl.
She's very strong. She's very strong. She's even now, though, she has a hard time dealing with it. She has a hard time being away from me when she gets to her dad's because she says, you know, to the counselors that she's afraid that I'm going to die in my sleep and things like that, which just is devastating to me. But I finally get her sleeping in her room again. And now we just got to cut down the texting and calling me 50 times a night.
Good luck with stopping a 10-year-old from texting you, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So longevity mentor, I mean, I know a little bit about this, obviously, with my work with Katie, but explain to our audience what that is.
As a longevity mentor, I get to, when a patient comes in and reaches out to longevity and I fit their criteria, they have different criteria. So say someone that's younger, I don't get many because there's not many young women. There's not as many young people that come in with children. You know, usually longevity will say, hey, can you reach out to this person? And so I do. And I reach out to them and see how they're doing and I answer any questions they have, mm-hmm. Give them my information to call anytime they want to talk. My last person that I mentor passed away a few months ago. But she was a very, very, I don't know the word for it. She fought to the end.
Right.
She has not given up. She was awesome. But I mean, I think she checked on me more than I checked on her. I'm like, okay, this is not supposed to work this way.
Yeah. You got that backwards, sister. Come on.
Yeah, she was awesome though. So that's what we do at Longevity is because, you know, sometimes as a patient, you can't talk to the doctor
right.
and them really understand what you're going through. Whereas Longevity connects people that can understand what you're going through with each other.
And I think that's huge. And you know, as far as your blog, you're touching people that you'll never meet in a way that's very personal. Because I know it's like writing a blog and putting your feelings out there. I mean, you did the same thing I did because I just had all these feelings and I wanted to get it out. And I just thought, well, I can type better than I can write. Lord knows most people can. And I'll just put it out there because I just need a way to get it out. And then you'll have your lung cancer survivors come talk to you and, you know, email you and say like, wow, I never knew someone else felt the same way that I did. And it's just a godsend for, you know, someone halfway across the world to know exactly that they're feeling the same thing you are.
Oh yeah, definitely. My blog is called, Keeping My Faith. And, two blogs ago, someone from Italy wrote to me on there, and I had to go to Google Translate so I could understand
awesome.
What they were saying, but they were asking, like, what medicine I was on and all this stuff and what treatments I was doing because his wife had stage 4 lung cancer. So I typed it up on Google Translate, and then I put it back in Italian on my post.
That's funny.
So he could understand it.
That's awesome. See, that kind of thing. I mean, I just love you're not being anonymous, but your listeners, your readers can be anonymous if they want and get the information because it's very, It's very scary. And sometimes people can only do what you and I do is blog and read about it because maybe they're too afraid to blog, but they want to get all the information they can.
Yeah, a lot of people don't want to talk about it. A lot of people mm-hmm. are ashamed of having lung cancer, and I just don't think that it should be something that you should be ashamed of. I think a lot of it stems from the stigma that's attached to it, and I want to stop that stigma. I want everyone to know that if you have lungs, you can get lung cancer. And
well, they don't ask other weird questions. Like when you have cervical cancer, it's like, imagine like all the naughty questions you could ask them. Well, did you?
Yeah, exactly.
What? I mean.
No, it's I mean, it's not the same, like, or pancreatic cancer. Oh, did you smoke? Well, smoking causes a lot more than lung cancer.
Right.
But it's just so associated with it from the past that it's hard to break through that stigma. And that's what we constantly try to do.
And I've seen a lot of commercials with Chris Draft for the American Cancer Association.
Yes, he started teaming up with American Cancer Society. Mm-hmm. Finally this year, it seems like I was so happy when that happened because he's so good at what he does and just promoting it. He's really dedicated to his wife's legacy, no doubt.
And I think it's good that the lung cancer community has found with him at least a face and a voice for lung cancer, and he will bring, you know, like you said, your survivors to the stadium, and then they will hopefully carry on and project the message along to everybody else. Because it's hard when you see somebody who's the caregiver. It's like, oh, well, his wife died. But then when you see, you know, you as a single mother, oh, well, she was 33. Well, that's about the same age I am. And I have a daughter, too. That could easily be me that I'm looking at on TV.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, when I saw Andy Dalton at the Taste of the NFL, his manager was with him, and he And I was like, you know, I introduced myself, and his manager was kind of blocking my way. And then he came back over to me, the manager did, and was like, Mr. Dalton wants to talk to you. And so I went back over there, and he said, do you have stage 4 lung cancer? And I said, yeah. And he goes, tell me about it. And he put his phone down and just totally listened to everything I said. And it was just kind of incredible that he took the time out to listen to something like that, you know?
Yeah, and that's awesome. And getting, you know, the athletes and the celebrities out there to pay attention to something other than, you know, the Oscars or themselves is very important to get the word out.
Mm-hmm, definitely, yeah.
Because I think a big award instead of, like, Oscars so white is, like, no more lung cancer. I mean, that should be the hashtag, lung cancer cured. And who cares?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So no surgery for me, just continue on this pill and mm-hmm. hope it just keeps working.
That's good. Now, how many people asked you if you were a smoker? Did you always get that roll your eyes and just...
Pretty much every time. And I also love the, another one of my pet peeves is this is how you cure lung cancer. And then I get these things, and I always research them because I'm like, maybe this is a cure. And so then I look and I'm like, okay, this is not gonna really work. So but yeah, no, I know they're trying to help,
right?
And it's, you know, just them trying to help, but you know, sometimes you get them so many times that you're like, okay, I can't keep up the research anymore, I just give up. But yeah, no, the smoking thing, it drives me nuts.
I hear you. Yeah, and we're trying to stop that with the help of Team Draft, Longevity, and the other group that we didn't get a chance to talk about, but maybe we will in a future broadcast, Free to Breathe. All great organizations for lung cancer. Your blog?
SamLMixon.blogspot.com.
Is the name mm-hmm. of the blog. And like I said, caregiver, survivor, friend, if you need any information about stage 4 lung cancer, Samantha is the person to go to because I say so.
Yes.
And so did Katie Brown. And she knows what she's talking about when it comes to lung cancer.
She definitely does.
Well, like I said, a half hour has gone by. That was pretty quick, right? This was easy.
All right, definitely. Yes.
So if you hang on, Samantha, I'm going to wrap up like I usually do. This is the Cancer Warrior, Mel Majoris. You can always find me on Facebook because I am a Facebook junkie, Mel Majoris. Check out my blog, thecancerwarrior.blogspot.com. And as always, life looks pretty good from where I'm sitting. Sending you good vibes. It's the Cancer Warrior on EmpowerRadio.com.